Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off, or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs, and My Lotto Rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Hello and welcome to the Newcastle Natter. My name is Fergus Craig and I'm joined by Paul Doolan.
Hello.
And Dave Watson.
Hi.
So, let's get straight into it. This is the first Newcastle Natter since the Carabao Cup final. We've left it a few days. We've left a few days to stew on it. Not because we've been busy with other things, just purely to stew on it. Dave, how are you feeling? Let's not go into the ins and outs of the game.
I'm all right. Do you remember before the game I said I was oscillating between like super positive, well, between super negative and then justifying why we're going to win, and then that third bit where it doesn't really matter because of how far we've progressed? I'm now safely in that third bit. It doesn't matter. Like, we'll be back. We'll be better the next time. Good.
And at what stage did you arrive at that third bit?
Probably an hour after the final whistle.
Right. Okay. Paul, how are you feeling?
Sort of the same as Dave, but it took me a few days to get there. I was quite low about it. Sunday night and all of Monday, that just sort of just felt it was flat rather than it wasn't that thing of, oh, we gave it a really good go and just fell a bit short. It was just like, yeah, that's a shame.
You had another reason to feel a bit shit on Sunday, didn't you, Paul?
Well, we were meant to watch the game together. We'd made plans.
Yes. I abandoned Paul. I let him down in a big, big way. I betrayed him.
I think that's slightly overplaying it. You got
on
a last
Saturday
minute.
Night. For weeks, I've been trying to get hold of a ticket in a very loose way, basically tweeting, Morphy Richards, do you want to get a ticket?
Zanussi, hot point, smeg.
I just always assumed that some corporate would want to capitalize on my wild and enormous fame and give me a ticket. It didn't show up. Saturday night, old school friend asked if I was going, mentioned that his younger brother might have a ticket. Never occurred to me to text his younger brother, because his younger brother always has a ticket for everything, because he's a sort of like wheeler dealer who sells sports stars autographs for a living.
How did you not think of that sooner?
I know. Yeah. I don't know how I didn't think of it. Like, he flew back from Bahrain, where he's been selling the shit for the final.
Fucking hell.
Lives a crazy life. And there was a possibility that he might have two tickets. So I was letting Paul know that there was a possibility that we could have two tickets. How much were we prepared to pay? And I think it was about 11 a.m. on Sunday that I said to Paul, there's one ticket and I'm taking it. So I did. But
can you imagine that, Dave? Can you imagine the sort of person that would do that?
I quite easily see the kind of self-centered, egotistical, just miserable bastard. That's who would do it.
You wouldn't have done that, Dave, would you?
No, because I've been to finals. I would have happily let a friend, like a good friend, a friend that I can rely on, I would have happily let them go to a final in my place.
None of us.
I'm just a better person.
We would both, Dave, 100% have not gone to that game.
No, of course not.
No way would have. I'd have taken the ticket and I'd have burnt it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'd have said that is for our friendship, which is what I was still expecting you to do at 4:29. I was like, he's going to turn up. He's going to burn it.
I would rather burn that ticket than the bridges. That's what I would rather do.
Well, I didn't burn the ticket, but I did essentially burn 250 quid because I watched us lose. I don't regret going. It was good to be there. I tell you what.
No remorse.
And I've seen some other people say this, so I don't think it's an overly controversial opinion. I was a little bit...
the most controversial opinion about some sort of George Soros global conspiracy.
I was a little disappointed by the atmosphere in the Newcastle end.
As you say, do you think that was the Newcastle end or was that Wembley? Because I've seen sort of a lot about the acoustics of Wembley generally.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to that. But and basically the flags, and the flags were there. The flags are very good at creating a, and I don't mean this in a negative way, but like manufacturing an atmosphere. If everyone's wearing a flag, it looks amazing. And I think everyone was very nervous in the same way that everyone who wasn't at the ground was.
Yeah.
I think everyone was very nervous and there was some singing, but kind of like with nerves with it, like sort of, please. and then it wasn't that far into the game that they scored. And then from then on.
Yeah.
Basically half an hour, they scored two goals in 6 minutes after half an hour. And it was,
I think, because I watched it in the Geordie Dome in Tufnell Park.
Oh, who were you where that with?
That was with Ross, who's occasionally done this pod before.
Yeah, not with Fergus, though.
No, I was abandoned, left for dead, like a pig in a ditch. That's fine. But the atmosphere there was amazing. But you can't... The air went out so quickly after that first goal. I think because the way our form had gone lately, we were all waiting to see which Newcastle would turn up. And when that happened, it was just like, oh, here we go again.
Yeah.
Especially like having, for people of our age with memories of the 98 and 99 finals and the 2000 semi, you just think, oh, yeah, we don't win here, do we?
It is amazing that we've played in three finals in our lifetimes and we've lost them all 2-0.
Yeah. But I think that the stark difference between this one and those is that I don't think we played particularly badly. I think the players certainly were trying, and I think that's the big difference. I think, but for them having a really good keeper and us, like Newcastle being wasteful, and our keeper, like, could a top class keeper have made the two saves? I mean, maybe, but not really. I think it's Man U on the day were clinical, and
second goal, it's possible that Pope saves that. It was obviously deflected, but it's possible that Pope stays a bit bigger.
Yeah, but it's like because those goals came in quick succession, it just knocked the wind out, and we've struggled to score one goal. So the thought of us getting two at the minute just seems, certainly against Man U, just seems it wasn't going to happen.
I think maybe some of us might have been a little bit surprised that Saint-Maximin started.
Yeah.
Just because of the way Eddie Howe is. And I guess we all hoped that that would mean that we would have more attacking threat than we've had in recent months. But I would say that didn't really materialise, right, Paul?
No, I don't think... Because I thought it would be a bit of a mistake to start Saint-Maximin, but I don't think you can really put the blame at him for our performance. Everyone just looked
on either. I don't think either goal, because the fear was that he were defensively weaker with him, but you wouldn't blame him in any way for either goal.
No, I think the problem is we've got worse at each end of the pitch. We've still got a fairly similar level of intensity. Players are still looking fairly decent in the middle, but you just think Wilson's dropped off a cliff and just doesn't seem able to score. And that back five just seems a little bit creakier. Dan Burns suddenly looks a bit more exposed. I don't know if that's just teams figuring out our weak points or if it is just a squad that's not been rotated particularly much starting to feel the effects.
I think it's certainly an element of teams figuring us out, but also us not yet having the kind of depth that a team pushing for the Champions League and in cup finals needs to get them over the line. Because you know, when they made changes, like they swapped Dalot, they took him off and brought on Aaron Wan-Bissaka, and Aaron Wan-Bissaka basically ended the threat down our left hand side because he's so good man for man. So they were able to make those changes.
If you remember in the preview podcast, you said that Wan-Bissaka wouldn't be able to handle Saint-Maximin.
I did. I got that wrong.
I'm the kind of guy. People get things wrong.
I wouldn't have done that, Dave, out of loyalty.
No, I know, because you're a good friend.
Yeah,
you're a good friend. Fergus is just a. But anyway, I just mean that they were able to bring on really good players like Sabitzer and Dalot and so on. Bissaka, sorry, and we had to rely on like Jacob Murphy and Matt Ritchie, and we just don't have the squad depth at the minute, and that's fine because we've only been this new level of Newcastle has only existed for like a season and a half.
But we don't have the squad depth and the first 11 that put us on that amazing run where, and we'll talk about whether we still are realistically competing for it, but we have been for a lot of the season competing for Champions League. And that first 11 got us to that position, but they're not in form at the moment. I mean, Almiron did a Julian Joachim, do you know what I mean? Or a Tony Yeboah. He just out of nowhere became one of Europe's best players and is now no longer anywhere near that category. You know, it's nice to know he's got him in him, but it's the right side of we'll still be looking for a right-sided attacking player in the summer, I would imagine.
Yeah, but we've also got Gordon and Isak who can play there. So I think I think we'll probably see Miggy rotated soon because it's.
Yes.
But I saw something on I think it was on Twitter where it was before the World Cup we were overperforming our expected goals by some margin, and now we are almost by the same difference underperforming. So just for ease, say that we were scoring like 15 where you'd expect us to score 10. Now we're only scoring 5. And I think that's part of it is the amount of changes we've had in the side, like losing Bruno, Wilson's been in and out of the side, Isak's been in and out of the side, et cetera, because of all these changes. I think it's just kind of unsettled at the business end of the pitch and at the back. We just look a little bit jaded, a little bit tired.
It was a sort of deceptive game because we, to my surprise, had the majority of the possession. And in many ways, we seemed to control a lot of the game. And if we hadn't have been 2-0 down so early, I would have said we were in it for a long time. But it was as soon as we got to the final third, I thought Man U defended very well.
Casemiro looked next level as well. I mean, I don't think we'll come up against a defensive midfielder as good as that this season.
Anyone approaching their box had three defenders on them. They just looked like they had more players. They were so on us.
Yeah. But I think that's a mark of like how you beat this team is how you beat Newcastle is you do kind of let them have the ball a bit more than they're comfortable with because we don't yet have the strength and depth and the quality to break through what they call a low block.
Right. Well, it was disappointing because... Well, as I said on the last podcast, I was not nervous about it because I had put myself in a position where I knew we would lose. But as soon as I knew I was going to the game, I was incredibly nervous because it was, we might win this and I might be there. It's just like I could just see that moment of happiness in my future, the possibility of it.
Yeah, I think the disappointing
thing else in my life these days, it was denied to me.
I think the disappointing thing is Man U weren't amazing and we had all the possession, but there's not none of our players, you would say, performed above their sort of normal level.
Yeah.
Which
nobody raised the game for the final, no.
And I think Man United were a better team, but it was quite a bad game. I don't think either side played well. I think if we had played at our best from pre-World Cup against the way Man United played on Sunday, I'm not saying we definitely would have won it because they did defend really well, but we would have been very competitive.
Yeah, Man U just looked capable. I sort of thought, even if we get it back to 2-2, this Man U team just looked like they were playing in second gear and could raise their level if we did, but didn't have to. Yeah. It didn't feel like they were under the cosh and it was just our bad finishing. They looked like a very efficient team that was competing on four fronts and was just conserving energy and doing what they needed to do.
I mean, we had a couple of chances, like the St. Maximum that we mentioned where De Gea makes the save. I think on another day, maybe, against another keeper, maybe. And I think the Joe Linton looping header, that one, yeah, that was a really good save by De Gea. So I agree. Neither a team were particularly good. It's just like we say, it just comes back to they're further along the road than we are, and they're better than us. And we would have had to have been at our best to beat even them at their middling.
Okay, well, let's have a quick break, and I think we'll have a look at what some of you NASA listeners have said on social media. We'll have a bit more of a chat about where we are heading as a team now that we know we're going another season without a trophy, but there are still things to fight for. And we'll have a chat about our forthcoming game against Manchester City. Back in a minute.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome back to the Newcastle Natter. So let's talk a little bit more about the Carabao Cup final. I want to talk more about my big day at the stadium. I feel like I was the on-the-scene reporter. In the stadium, 2-3 hours before, a lot of time to kill with someone I hadn't spoken to since he was about 8.
It went well. Pick up where you left off. Talk about Lego.
Yeah. No, it went well. He was chatty, and we spoke to some other Newcastle fans. It was good. But yeah, it was all a bit nervy. Club Wembley. It's not worth the extra money. Anyway, right. Sorry. I thought I'd have more anecdotes.
I think we might need a new correspondent. This guy, our man in Beirut. Quite low.
It's not nice. Don't cut.
What they have in there, but we didn't go in there, is they have like a proper pub, like with glass and everything. We didn't go
proper pub with glass.
You know,
hang on a second. The thing that you were trying to save this anecdote with was there was a pub that we didn't go into.
I'm just trying to give you insight into what it's like for those.
Cool. Do that then. Do that instead of what you're doing.
No, but actually, I'm telling you what was there. That there was there's a pub in Club Wembley. Just letting you know that.
What was it like on the inside?
Well, you could see outside. Because we were sat outside it with our drinks. Once you're in a seat, you just sort of like stay, don't you?
I don't know. I wouldn't know. I didn't go to Wembley, did I?
Okay. Another little really interesting anecdote. The pints at Wembley Stadium don't really cost more than the pints outside Wembley Stadium in London. In other words, they cost £7.
Fuck! What?!
But in London, a pint costs about £7 these days.
Dave, I saw quite a few Geordies around King's Cross who had some views on London beer prices.
Yeah. £7?
Yeah.
I pay half that here.
Really?
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
I mean, to be fair, the London pub, me and Fergus watched one of the England games in during the World Cup. Was about £2.50 a pint or something.
And they had £1.59, but it was a Wetherspoons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And next day's toilet incidents were definitely interesting. There's no such thing as a free lunch.
Fantastic. Okay, back to the football. sorry, I thought I'd try and do a little bit of colour.
Yeah, it's good. I feel like I was there. The pub had glass.
Yeah. Sorry.
The trouble is,
I had a cherry Bakewell. Carry on, Dave.
Oi, oi.
I was just going to say, there's not a lot of incidents in the game. Genuinely, there wasn't any. There's no like contentious decisions. Like VAR makes that Casemiro goal. There's no point discussing it because, like, VAR says it, so fucking what can you do? But it's nothing really happened, which is partly why I think the atmosphere was so bad in the stadium.
Yeah,
well, not so bad, but just not great.
There was nothing to get the crowd going. I think if you'd have been watching that as a neutral at home and your partner had said, "Do you mind if we change the channel?" You'd have gone,
Yeah. I think, like, normally with a final, you sort of try and find a performance or an incident to hang it all on. I think the closest you could come is this is like the Stanley Matthews final. This is probably the Casemiro's quite good, isn't he? Final.
Yeah.
It wasn't like.
Having said
that. That was all I took out of that game, really.
Having said that, in general, when I watch Newcastle, I've very rarely noticed the other team's players. Which meant that I didn't really notice how good Casemiro was. I kept on saying how good Bruno was. Yeah. He didn't have one of his best games for us or anything, but he's a class above most of what we have in that first 11. It's the posture. Do you know what I mean? It's the vision, the time of the ball. And I just love those central midfielders with that sort of chest out posture.
Yeah,
he looks infused with energy. He's packed with energy. Do you know what I mean? He's a tightly coiled spring, Dave. Carry on, Dave.
I was just going to say that he and Botman I thought Botman had a decent game. I don't think it was his best, like everybody else. I think he and Botman had good games. And I think that's where we're going to be, like, that's the level of play we're going to be attracting. And if we can replace players like, you know, like Almiron, like Sean Longstaff, Shah, Dan Byrne, you know, if we can replace those with Bruno and Botman stat players, next time we go to a cup final, which I don't think will be very long, we will be able to compete with the likes of Man U, with the likes of Liverpool and Arsenal and Man City and all the rest of them. I truly believe we're not far off it.
Yeah, I think Isak looked good as well, which does make you think.
Yeah.
All the players in the We've Got Bruno in the Middle song did well. Maybe we need to extend the song to just cover every position.
I've got some stuff from Twitter followers here. I'll just read it out. We've got Tony Armstrong, who says, "We were poor. Even our big players failed to step up. I no longer think that the current players who have been with us for a while and are getting game time are good enough. I love these guys, but sadly, they need to become the bench with better players being brought in." We'll talk more about that. Lloyd Kent says, "Now there's no silverware for this season. What's the minimum we should be achieving in your opinions? We will need a much deeper squad to cope with European games if we get it." Mike Beatty, "Lack of strength in depth caught up with us. Now it's up to the team to focus again on the league and get the 30 points, which would see us in fourth." Okay, he's calculated that somehow. And Andy Sheldon, basically it's all pretty much the same. Andy Sheldon says, "Our lack of depth and ability to create and score is glaringly obvious and will hopefully be remedied in the close season. Where do we think we'll finish this season with the squad we have?" That's a good question. We were third not so long ago. There was even talk of us being in the title race. I think we can safely say that's no longer the case. Where we are now, how do you see the rest of the season going? What do you think? Where do you think we'll finish, Dave?
I think we'll finish fifth or sixth. I can't see us getting Champions League now. I think the size that were below us, the bigger sides that were below us have kicked on a gear. I think Spurs are a weird side and we'll could fuck up quite easily, but Man U are just they're becoming a machine. They're becoming very reminiscent of the 90s under Ferguson, just never know when they're beaten, just look an absolute unit. So yeah, I think fifth or sixth, and I think that's amazing given where our expectations at the beginning of the season, to be disappointed to be only in the top six. It's just incredible.
I think, I mean, are we looking back on our expert? I think we were sort of predicting about sixth.
I think lower than, I think I said seventh and I was the most optimistic.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, I think I was saying like ninth, but yeah.
What do you think, Paul?
It's hard to, I think there's a bit of recency bias that's making us think we're suddenly shit, whereas actually we've gone.
Yeah, I don't think we're shit. Just
we've gone quite
recalibrate.
A few games without Bruno. All our games, even when we were winning a lot, apart from that spell in sort of October, November, where we suddenly started scoring loads, a lot of our wins have been on very tight margins. It could have gone either way, and it's just been sort of Miggy having an amazing game, and Trippier's set piece delivery being better than it currently is. It's fine margins, but I still think the reason other managers were saying we were in the race for the top four and couldn't be ruled out, I think at least Klopp said it, possibly even Conte, is we're not going to be playing as many games as the other teams around us. And we have freshened up our squad a little bit. I mean, I know it's only Anthony Gordon, but it feels like we can rotate a bit more than we have been. In a way, I think our dip in form means we'll actually rejig things. I think we held on a bit too long to a system that was a bit stale. So I don't think we'll necessarily not be top six. It's all Spurs and Liverpool could both go on really good runs. Spurs and Liverpool could both be as inconsistent as they have been all season. You just don't know.
Since you mentioned it, Kieran Trippier's delivery has been awful. Yeah. Like, considering like we we all sort of know him for having such good delivery. You sort of forget that it's quite a few games now where it's been really bad, and particularly so in the final. I think there were a couple of short corners that didn't do anything, but his actual delivery, it was either not beating the first man or way too deep. It was just really disappointing.
Yeah.
It's because I think in my head, it's like darts players. Do you know what I mean? It's like once you know how to do that, you should be able to do it on a pretty regular basis, no matter what.
It's like James Ward-Prowse doesn't seem to have off patches, but then I don't watch James Ward-Prowse every week, so maybe he does.
Yeah.
I just think it's very strange when you've got a team as, you know, physically big as us, that we don't put more balls into the mixer. Because we've got huge, huge lumbering, you know, slabs of meat in the box that just when our like ground game isn't working, when we're not finding the pockets of space for Bruno and Almiron and all the rest of it, we've got a guy who should be able to deliver it into that area regularly. He doesn't have to put it on a fucking sixpence. He just has to get it into that area. So yeah, it's a strange one.
But as tall as Dan Burn and Sven Botman are, in terms of attacking headers, they're no Jamal Lascelles. I'm not saying that should put him in the side, but like, they're not actually very good attacking
headers. I feel like Botman early this season looked like he was, and looked like a goal was coming any game. And that's, I wonder if, I mean, we've underperformed our XG massively with set pieces and chances coming from free kicks. So I think just as Miggy outperformed first half of the season and regressed to the mean, whatever you call it, there's no saying the same won't happen the other way and we'll suddenly start writing those stats of goals from chances. But I think Trippier's delivery needs to improve. But we're still creating one gilt-edge headed chance pretty much every game, minimum.
I think we'll finish sixth, possibly seventh. I don't know. Hopefully fifth or sixth. It's weird looking at the table. I mean, we've got a game in hand on them, but Liverpool are only 2 points behind us. But in my head, it's like they haven't won a game all season. They've been like they've been awful. How are they?
They're so bad against Palace, but then they beat Wolves last night as we record on Wednesday.
Yeah.
But they look so, they're not good to watch. So it feels very un-Liverpool.
Yeah. I mean, they've got like, was it 10 points from the last four games, which is, you know, fantastic form. Whereas we've got, 7 points from the last six. So we're not in great form, and they are in really, really good form. I still think that they give up too many opportunities at the back. I think their midfield's pretty pedestrian, to be honest, now. And Salah isn't having his usual 20-something plus goals a season. So I don't think that they'll catch us. And I also think that Spurs are very Spursy, like even under Conte, and they're only 4 points ahead of us, and we've got two games in hand on them. So I think there is a chance of us getting in the top four, but it'll be close.
So just quickly, I would suggest that the story of the second half of our season is going to be an absence of goals or attacking threat. I fear that's what it's going to be. How do we remedy that in the short term and also in the summer? What do we need to do for both of those?
I think we have to rotate the front three more than we have. So I think Isak has to come in for Wilson. I think Maxi's maybe done enough to keep his place there, but with Willock back, you can always put Joel Linton up there. And then I think Gordon on the right.
Isak hasn't set the world alight yet. He hasn't had much of a chance to do so, but surely he's got to be given a bit of a run in the side, right, Dave?
Yeah, definitely. And a run in the side with our chief, you know, orchestrator in Bruno. There's an argument to be made that Isak was bought to play in front of a midfield including Bruno, and he hasn't really had that opportunity, you know, either through his own injury or Bruno's suspension. So getting those two, making the same kind of passing interchanges that we were seeing earlier on with Almiron and Trippier and Bruno, I think that's an avenue to goals. I think my argument would be keep Almiron and introduce Gordon, and then you've got that relentless pressing, high energy, decent technical pace to burn. But instead of us playing such a high line, just drop it back a bit to give more space for those pacey players to run into.
I saw someone making the case on Twitter, and they did so with clips that made the case well, that Saint-Maximin can actually be a lot better on the right. What they were saying was, on the left, he has a tendency to go down blind alleys, just working it onto his right foot. His thing is that he just ends up sort of dribbling past players around the edge of the box, looking for an opportunity to shoot or some kind of through ball, and before long, he's got a blocked shot or he gets tackled. Whereas, I mean, this was just a few clips. I don't remember a long periods of him playing on the right. But on the right, he just gets it to the byline and crosses it.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about I'm talking about in the box along the side. So I'm not talking about like the traditional winger. But
the pullbacks and the
pullbacks and all of that. Yeah. And it's not a criticism of him. I wonder whether that was quite a good point, and it might be worth trying to get the best out of him from there.
It's sort
particularly,
of
particularly considering Almiron's form suggests maybe it's time for him to have a little bit of time out the side, a little bit of rotation. Yeah.
I would also just to build on that, I'd say that Almiron, Saint-Maximin, Gordon, Isak, they can all play on either flank.
Yeah.
So even during the game, you said it was Saint-Maximin on the side, just swap them over, because at the very least, it sows the seed of doubt in the defender. Like, I know I'm supposed to be up against Saint-Maximin. Like you say, I know that if I send him down that blind alley, he'll happily fucking run down it. Or Almiron, I know to send him, to push him wide because he can't cross for Toffee. You swap them over, they've got a different question to answer there, haven't they?
Yeah. Worth trying. I'll mention it to Eddie.
I think as well, Saint-Maximin feels a little bit neutered by having Byrne behind him as a left back. There's no overlapping runs that you would maybe get with Matt Target or a more traditional left back. So it means what he gets to those blind alleys, there's no out ball, there's no fullback taking one of the three players around him away. So he's having to beat three players half the time and manages it more often than not, but it's still.
I saw us being linked with Kieran Tierney this week. Mm. And with that in mind, what are your top three positions that you would like filled this summer? And you can throw in someone you'd like in there if you would like. There's a lot of talk that we are going to up the project this summer and spend quite big. What three positions would you like filled, Paul?
We need a number six. Badly. I feel like left back is hard on Matt Target because we've not seen enough of him, but I don't think he's the project's long-term left back. I feel like Kieran Tierney or similar is not a bad shout. Cher's not getting any younger. I feel like centre-back could maybe wait a season.
I asked for three, Paul.
I know, I'm just thinking. I'm deciding whether we need a number nine or a centre-back. I don't think we can rely on Wilson for a season. And he's in a bad run of form at the minute. I think, given Isak's flexibility, I think striker, with Isak able to play across the front three. But I think we'll find out in the second half of this season.
Dave?
Striker, number six. I think number six is the absolute priority. Yeah. Striker, and I would honestly say left back. And again, yeah, it might be harsh on target, but I think if we can find a Trippier level, Trippier when he was, you know, when he's peak form, that like marauding fullback on the left, I think that gives us much more balance in the side. But it's the number six. I mean, Jesus, if we can get the number six, I think we're golden.
I would go with you, Dave. And I mean, hopefully we'll sign more than three players this summer. But yeah, those are the three positions that could really.
I mean, the talks are, very briefly, the talks are that the sponsorship, I mean, the shirt sponsor's up for bid. The commercial deals, depending on where we end up in the league, could be like massive compared to what we're on now. So there could be quite a bit of money. And also, if this is the platform that we're building from, it might mean that they're more willing to take a risk on greater expenditure because they know that the money's going to be coming in. FFP will be covered by the commercial deals and by the prize money from Europe.
Well, certainly if we surprised us all and actually got into the Champions League, then that would improve that situation a lot. And I wonder maybe whether they might sort of have a look at Chelsea and go, should we do these 10-year deals?
Are you not allowed to anymore?
Hopefully not.
The rules come in that you can't amortize over, I think it's 8 years. You're not allowed to do that anymore. It's got to be lower than that. It might be seven, but I don't know. It's just
anyway. I hope we don't do it. We'll see. But anyway, okay. So our next game is we've got a nice sort of like way of easing back into the Premier League by facing Manchester City this Saturday, early kickoff away. We're at the Etihad. Dave, how do you see that going?
Badly. I don't think we're going to suddenly like cast off the poor form. I think we are still struggling to score, and we are now more easily to score against. I think it, like a fairly routine 2-0 loss, to be honest.
Paul?
Yeah. Kind of agree. Tricky first half of the season, it felt like us against the big teams. We were almost like sort of disruptors, as you'd be in the tech world. It didn't matter what they did, we would just go all at them. But then Liverpool and Man U, I think we just showed that tiredness is still there. And it feels almost too soon after the final for that to go. I feel like the turnaround comes after this game. I think 2-0 defeat as well.
Yeah, it's a shame. It feels like the most likely outcome is that it sort of compounds our lack of momentum and confidence, you would say, at the moment. But Man City is still a bit unpredictable this season.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I mean, they drew 1-1 with Forest not so long ago. So, you know,
Having said that, genuinely, if I had to bet a score, I'd go 4-0. but three of those goals coming like in the last 10 minutes or something. But
I think it's going to be interesting seeing the team selection.
Yeah, because frankly, I don't think Wilson did anything in the. For me, the League Cup final was his chance to make a case for him staying in the starting 11 ahead of Isak. Can't see that he made that case strongly. And I think Isak, Bruno, Botman, Pope, that spine of the team, I think is what we'll build it around rather than Wilson.
Yeah,
I think it's the first moment that Eddie Howe's been sort of, I mean, obviously the fan base is massively behind him, but I think it's the first time that he's sort of being challenged a little bit, like, okay, what are you going to do about this? Because it's not working at the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there was a little bit early on last season where the results just weren't coming, and there was that feeling of like, he's a good manager, but we've appointed the wrong manager for the job.
Sure. But since he proved himself and very quickly became, it's gone very well since last spring. Yeah, this is the first sort of like, I mean, we're fifth in the table and we've just been in a final. So things aren't going badly, but we are, like everything we've been discussing, he's got to come up with answers to what the issues are.
I think as well, we're sort of talking about it like the season might fizzle out, but there's every chance the last game of the season is going to feel like another final if it's dependent on top four.
I mean, that would be great. If we can be in that race, if we can get it, that would be great. But who knows? Well, you know, just for the enjoyment of it, I would just any European football, just the extra game in the week. It might be difficult for the squad to deal with, but it would be fun to have. Although, but then I'd have to get myself a fucking BT subscription as well.
But that's part of the reason why we've been signing players like that, Garan Kual, Harrison Ashby. We bought a couple other players for the youth team that I don't remember. But they're at a level where they are probably too good for the under-18s and under-21s, but not quite good enough for the Premier League. That's the kind of depth that you need to have a go at European football. It's like we had under Robson and stuff. You know, Lamana Luwa was starting games and you know, that like caliber of young player, that's what we need. And I think that's where we'll do. I think we'll buy more of that than we will do for the first team.
Well, if we can buy Lamana Luwa, then I'll be happy.
Who wouldn't? Him and Scholler in together again.
Oh, God.
He was like the championship Asprilia, wasn't he?
A player who could confuse defenders because neither they nor he knew what he was going to do.
Honestly.
I always remember Shearer saying, well, yeah, you know, you don't know what he's going to do next. But, you know, if I don't know what he's going to do next, defenders don't know what he's going to do next.
Yeah, you'd much prefer exactly where it's going to go.
Yeah.
I'd love the European games. They were some of my favorite fixtures. The town was always filled with like NAC Breda fans or like Lokeren fans or something like that. And it was just fun to meet fans of clubs that you never usually play against and, you know, have a beer with them. You know, matches under the lights, lovely stuff.
Ooh. Well, I hadn't anticipated Luwalawa coming up on this podcast. I'm glad he did. And yes, you've got me excited about the thought of European football at any level. So let's hope we can make that happen. There'll be much more to talk about next week. But in the meantime, thank you very much, Dave Watson.
Thanks, Fergus.
Thank you, Paul Doolan.
Thank you, Fergus.
And thank you to you, the Newcastle United listener. Goodbye!
If you want to advertise on or sponsor this show, check us out at playbackmedia.co.uk.
Sports Social Podcast Network.